one.
Yeah.
Booms is so good.
They cover all they cover all bases. So they cover vegan, gluten-free.
They've got really good drinks too.
And got really good drinks.
Local beers. Yeah. You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Booms.
Booms.
Never even heard of it. I'm going to make a note. All right. Well, we're
here.
We started.
I just started.
All right.
We're live.
Yo, everybody. This is a another episode of the Mind Body Marathon podcast. So I'm your host, Dr. Leo Kormanek. And on the show today, we have old regular
Zach. Me.
Goulet. And then we have a special guest in studio, Alex Phillips, the legend from Ohio, Northeast Ohio, and John Carroll, North Carolina guy. And so we're going to kind of talk about his career and just kind of go through some of highlights from his career and actually kind of what you're getting into now.
He's the humble hero.
Are you humble?
That would depend on who you ask.
When you talk to me, you're very low key.
Yeah. So now, what are you training for now? Somebody's telling me you're doing some ultra stuff now.
So I leave next Wednesday for Trail de Dent du Midi in Switzerland. It is a 57K, the oldest trail race in the world.
Trail race in the world.
It's about 12,000 feet of gain, 35.5 miles. It should be interesting.
What's your elevation at?
I think we start around 3,000 and climb up.
Yeah, I don't think it's very high.
8,000.
But what is it? It's in the Dolomites? Or it's in the Alps?
It starts in Champaray, Switzerland.
Okay.
So it's not far. It's a couple towns over from where UTMB runs. Yeah. I got talked into it by local legend Connie Gardner.
Yeah, well, she actually did that race in the past at some point, right?
She did. I think she did pretty well, too. Top three.
Is she going out there with you guys?
No. Just other local Akron runners, Nikki and Eamon.
Yeah. Well, she's not going out because she didn't get her passport, I heard.
That's such a Connie
thing. In very Connie fashion.
Anything that requires an extra step. She's like, I would love to come get treated by you, but that requires me going to go up and get treated by you.
I have to get my car and drive.
Yeah, she was a great episode. We had a lot of fun with her, a lot of great stories. But are you excited to dabble with something farther like this?
Yeah, it's definitely a change of pace in terms of training, you know, mentality, thought going in, fueling versus a 5K or 10K on a track. And so the mindset right now is just to try and get out there and finish.
Yeah.
What has been your biggest takeaway from like doing more ultra type running to
the training is so different. So different. You know, when you're doing 5K, 10, and this might not be the case for everybody, but when you're doing 5K, 10K training, you know, track, cross country in college, everything's very intense, specific, focused. You know, you're very driven every day trying to check a specific box versus ultra marathon training. I've seen a lot of, you know, today I'm going to go out and run a marathon on the trails for fun. We're going to stop at mile 14 and have a cup of coffee.
It's like cycling, you know, where they'll like go out for like a long like bike ride, but they'll stop at a cafe and get like espressos and like croissants and biscuits and stuff.
Well, the first time I ever went on like a training run for that with them for like some of the ultra stuff when we were getting ready for Rim to Rim to Rim, I show up and I'm like, all right, like I don't really know what this is going to be like. Like, you know, I've just kind of come from the same world you were part of, but that definitely did some marathons as well. And I was like, all right, let's go. And then we start running and it's like, really slow, just shuffling. I'm like, all right, this is gonna be fine. Like, like if this is what we're doing the whole time, like I got it.
Definitely, that control to not go out at
What's your furthest that you've run training wise?
28.
Yeah, perfect.
We did some CVNP trails last weekend.
A 28 for 28 miles, perfect.
Yep. So perfect. We'll see how that goes. See if that bodes well for 12,000 feet in the Swiss mountains.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Are you looking to just run it, or are you looking to compete?
You know, I'd like to tell you that I would just like to go run it, but I know as soon as I get out there and I see the start line and other guys competing that I want to try and go out
Here's
there.
Here's the thing. You got that competitive nature. And my thing is always this, like I'm not in that boat anymore, but on some of the more like local ultra races, I want to go out there to go enjoy myself, to test myself. But if I'm in a position to win, that competitive nature is going to come right back.
Oh, I can't play a game.
I can't imagine. Yeah,
dude, you just got to hang with the leader till the last like quarter mile and then just explode.
That's what they're going to see, like, the, you know, me and Eamon, the two Americans out there with our half tights and just t-shirt, you know, whatever we can carry in our hands.
Yeah, I heard Eamon's pretty fit too, so that'll be fun.
he'll be a good challenge as well.
Yeah, yeah,
it should be interesting. A big change of pace from Cleveland for sure.
So when you guys are hitting the trails in the national park here, what pace are you guys running?
It depends on the day. Anywhere from like 6:30s to 8 flat.
Jesus.
Try to keep it as fast as possible. Just because, you know, when you're running, they're pretty hilly here, but there's nothing comparable to what we're going to be doing out in Switzerland. And so we've done a lot of Planet Fitness stair stepping too, which makes me look insane.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm on, you know, almost the highest setting running on the stair stepper at the local Planet Fitness. And everyone's like, you know, what is this guy doing?
He's training for war.
Yeah. Only way to get ready for something of like that caliber.
Yeah, which I wish we would have done that before our rim to rim. We definitely did not train the quads enough.
How much climbing was that?
Well, the descent really wrecks you at first, and then your legs are all shaky from the descent. And then at points, it's about 1,000 feet a mile. I don't even know what the total vert was.
I thought it was 12.
Yeah, was it 12?
Yeah.
Wow.
Total.
So
pretty similar.
Very similar.
Yeah. But you get it all
10 miles farther, but you get it all on the edges, right? Because in the middle, there's nothing. It's flat.
Well, it's still 1,200 feet of elevation gain in the canyon.
And 1,200 in the canyon? Oh, 1,200. Yeah. Not 12,000. Yeah. You're right. So what is he going to do when you're in Europe?
So we've got a very makeshift plan.
Perfect.
We're getting in. We're going to Champeray. I think we're going to go out and taste some local beers the night before the race, get our race in. After that, we're headed to the Matterhorn.
Mm-hmm. To Zermatt.
Going to do some hiking and exploring there.
Yeah.
Head down to Lake Como and then hopefully do some backpacking through the Dolomites.
Yeah.
Before heading home. So,
man, that is a great trip.
Matterhorn. Yeah, we were just there about a year ago.
It's
me and Jacqueline. It's beautiful.
So cool.
It's beautiful.
Have you been over there?
I have not. No, I'm excited to go, but you know, like any endurance runner,
so
get in the mountains.
When you're at, so you guys are going to be in Zermatt, right?
Yep.
So make sure when you go there to go out at night, because I'm pretty sure they're in their like their non-touristy season right now. It's a small window. And so you can go out with the locals and it's so much fun. It's much fun.
Get the real experience.
Yeah.
So, did you ever compete in Europe?
No. No, farthest away I competed was Los Angeles. So
is that like Mount Sac or something like that?
Yeah, Brian Clay, Mount Sac, Stanford invites.
Yeah.
Cool, really cool race. I mean, the weather out there, it's 50 degrees, low humidity, no wind. It's fast. Yeah.
Perfect conditions.
Yeah, that's where people get out there and hammer, man. So yeah, so fill me in. You know, you go to high school at St. V, then you go to John Carroll and you pop and you start running ridiculous things. And when did the switch flip? Like, when did that happen? Like, was it like your sophomore year, your freshman year?
Yeah. You know, I remember, I guess we'll start like coming out of high school, going into John Carroll, sitting down with Kyle right before the beginning of the summer. You know, I was a 25 mile a week guy in high school, give or take.
And yeah,
that allowed me to run some pretty good times. I thought 16 flat, 940, 428 or so in the mile. And so I remember telling Kyle at the beginning of the summer, you know, like, there's no way I'm getting up to 80. 80 just feels impossible right now, mileage wise. And as that summer started to progress, just increased volume, increased consistency. Instead of 3 days a week running, it was 7 days a week running. And I remember a tempo I did. It was 5 miles at 5:10 pace, which was just about my 5K PR and then some. And I was like, huh, you know, I could actually be pretty good at this.
Yeah.
You know, carry on to.
Was that your freshman year then?
That was summer going into freshman year.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the first like, okay, you know, maybe I could be really good at this.
Oh my gosh.
You know? I got on campus and I looked at Kyle and I had a head full of air at that point. I was like, I'm going to win a national championship here. And Kyle laughed and he's like, okay, you know, we'll see.
But where did that come from? With that like singular workout or workouts like that? You were just like, oh my God, I'm going to run out of my mind here.
It was blind confidence in myself after like a couple good sessions that like in my mind, I was one of the best in the country before I was even one of the best in like the local Cleveland area. And so,
wow.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
You know, I can't say it like stemmed from like one specific workout or like one specific like thought in my head. It just, like, I guess I've always had this like blind confidence in myself. I wouldn't call it blind necessarily, but confidence that like, I always say the best have like the confidence that they have the toolbox that nobody else has. you talk to anyone that's like really successful in running, they'll say, you know, I have what somebody else doesn't have. I have the work ethic. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to do more. I'm willing to grind more, suffer more, et cetera. And so I've always believed that I like had that like peace that nobody else.
I can attest to that.
Nobody else had. And so after that, like, you know, just that like early workout, I was like, okay, you know, maybe I should focus on this, get serious about running.
Well, let's back up though. But like, you know, let's just pick an average year in high school, your, you know, sophomore year, junior in high school. Like, where was that feeling? Was that feeling still there? Or was it just like,
it was definitely
a little bit more dormant.
Yeah. I, not to the same level of like, you know, I can be at the next level of like winning things. But in high school, like I was a 16.05 or something guy my freshman year. I was one of the higher placers in the state. I think I was like 40s or so. Sophomore year, came back and was 16th place. And so it was trending in the right direction of like, this is where I want to be. This mm-hmm. is how I want to get there. I just don't think I was doing the physical work to back up that belief at that point. And so once the belief got met with like substantial workload, like those two combined, that belief in yourself plus the work, the willingness to do the work and the work to back up, definitely made a difference in my running and that's my like, ability to compete.
That's like pretty similar to like Clayton.
No, that's what's amazing about it.
Like that's like almost identical to like the way that Clayton transitioned from high school to college.
I mean, the 20 miles a week in high school and was awesome for you because it like, you know, kept you this like internal governor. And then you worked on your mind and you captured like the grit side of it before you actually got too fit, you know, like too well developed from all the training. And then now all of a sudden you add that variable in, which everybody, you can always add training stimulus in later, but you can't really put the tiger in the cat, if you will.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that it was both my Achilles heel and something that was super helpful was my thought was always, I'm going to do more than everybody else. And so it's something that Kyle told me right before I left was what makes you good prevents you from being great. And so yes, like it's good to build 80, 90, 100, 110 miles a week, but you get to a certain point where it's like, is it good to do 110 miles a week the week you're trying to run a fast 10K? No. You know, if your confidence comes from your training, you're not actually confident.
Right, right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, you got to be confident before you take the shot.
Well, I always took away from you. So the reason why I'm talking the way I am is because I used to treat Alex when he was at John Carroll, because I treat at John Carroll with the track and cross country team. And you're, from what I can attest to, was your confidence wasn't solely around training. Your training was to get you prepared for competition, but your mindset was more on the competition later on when we were really getting there. And that's what I loved about you.
Oh yeah. I hate losing. I mean, that's like the way I'd think about races was like, you know, in the weeks leading up every day, like I'm running 10 miles by myself and I'm just flipping through the race in my head. My God,
that's amazing. The visualization side of it.
Every single, like, you know, they say to be successful in running, you have to have an unhealthy, you know, obsession with it to some degree, which is good and bad to say. But, you know, every day when I woke up, I was like, what can I do to be better today? Yeah. What can I do to be better this morning? You know, what can I do to be prepared for this race this weekend? How can I think about it, visualize it, see myself being successful? And when you get to that point where you're like seeing it every day and training for it every day, it's not a choice, I guess. Like when you're racing, when you've decided that you're going to do whatever it takes to win, like you're excited about the pain that's coming because you've seen it. It can't hurt you when it comes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
It's like you're mentally ready. Milt used to say at UNC, people get nervous before races, right? But he's like, if I told you on a Tuesday morning we're about to go extremely hard in this workout, all of you guys would be stoked.
Yeah,
you wouldn't be nervous. So why are you stoked about being like, you know, hurting potentially not doing well?
Very good point. Very good point.
Well, the other thing too that I always admired about you was your ability to understand the grind and knowing that there was going to be some level of discomfort, whether that be like aches and pains throughout training. Like when you would come in, you'd be like, yeah, no, my knee is just, you know, it's like stabbing pain, but you know, after about 2 miles or so, feels better. And it's just like, maybe you don't want to go that extreme because I think there are anomalies, but to that, I think a lot of runners right now are afraid and they want that perfect setup when they don't understand that true commitment like you're talking about.
Oh, there's for sure a difference between feeling pain and being injured.
Yeah.
And running especially at the collegiate level, you know, 70, 80, 90, 100 plus mile weeks, every morning you're going to wake up with aches and pains.
Right.
And as you go on through college, you got to be able to know, like, learn your gauges, learn what pain is and what injury is, what you can push through. And that just takes a lot of time to develop, like you said, and the willingness to push past like minor aches and pains to be able to get that consistency and stack your days, stack your weeks.
So when did you win your first national championship?
That was the fall of my junior year, cross country. And that one was a very liberating race, I would say. I went into the sophomore year 10K that spring, ranked first, and had probably one of my worst races in college, ended up getting fifth.
Yeah, I remember that.
Was, yeah, very disappointed. You know, felt like I had something to prove at that point, you know, wanted to show everyone that I, you know, I can win, show myself that I can win at the highest level. And that did not end the way I wanted. And so came in that summer with a bit of a vengeance for that cross country fall. Talked about it all summer. You know, this is what I want to go. This is what I want to do. This is where I want to go. This is where I want to be, and did the work to back it up. And so I remember with about 2000 meters to go, I took over the race, and it was just me and one other guy, Elias Lindgren, great competitor, really great guy. And with about 600 to go, he had me gapped by about 25, 30 meters or so. And I was still tracking him close enough. And I saw with about 200 to go, he tied up. And, you know, I remember like my body just shot with like adrenaline, like no pain, nothing. Like it just felt like, you know, I was doing a stride at practice, like screaming past him, you know, everyone around. It was such an incredible feeling to get that win. And do it with all my John Carroll teammates around was really cool too.
Yeah, man, that is a fascinating thing. So so then you go on to track from there and then start dominating.
I had a really good indoor season that winter as well. Won the 3K indoors and the 5K indoors. Broke 14 for the first time, which was really exciting. You know, that's like, you know, everyone's got their barriers, the 5 minute, the 14 minute, whatever it might be, 8 minute in the 3K that you want to chase and track down. And so just to see, like, you know, it was slow that my times came down, but, you know, little by little progress, it was going to where I wanted it to be. And that helped continue give me the confidence to compete on the national stage. And, you know, in college running, times don't really matter. Championships do. Can you win? Can you compete? Yeah. In the era of track inflation, nobody really cares what times you're running, but can you win on the biggest stage?
Yeah.
And so to like show that I can win and run fast was important, you know, that I can do both. So that was really cool.
Now, so how many national championships did you win in Division III?
Seven time Division III national champion.
That's so sweet. So, what were the seven?
Cross country junior year, 5K, 3K indoor, 10K outdoor, cross country senior year, 5K, 10K outdoor senior year.
Okay.
And so I'll give a shout out to my teammate Daly. He won the 5K.
Oh, don't give him that shout out.
My junior year, Daly won the 5K in a pretty incredible race.
Yeah, he did. It was a pretty awesome race. So
8 out of 10 went to John Carroll.
Yeah.
In 2 years.
Yeah.
Dang. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. That was a heck of a meet.
Now, at what point did you decide to depart to UNC?
That was pretty early, actually. I think I went in the portal end of junior year and intending to finish my time with Kyle. You know, there's sometimes the grass is greener on the other side, but training was going so well at John Carroll. I had a lot of faith in what Kyle was giving me and what we were doing there. And so, believe it or not, he was actually one of the people that gave me the push to say, you know, you have this extra eligibility. You know, you should get out there and go see what's out there. Give yourself a chance to compete at the highest level. And so it was, went in the portal end of junior year and talked to a lot of schools around the US.
Yeah.
North Carolina, obviously I chose them, but they're one of the best programs in the world, not only for the sake of, you know, high caliber athletes and Parker Wolf, Ethan Strand, and those types of guys that are competing on the world stage while they're in college.
Yeah.
But also just like the type of people that are developed there. Milt always said, he's like, good people are good runners. Good men are good runners. And so what that means is if you handle your business every day, you make your bed when you wake up, you eat healthy, you do your homework to prepare, like you know, a Monday, you're getting ahead. So for Saturday, you're getting better, the good hour to race. All of these things culminate together to make you a good runner and also a good person. You can't really have one without the other.
Yeah.
And so you leave North Carolina as a better person and a better runner. So it's a sort of a win-win situation.
A little bit of a military academy kind of approach.
Yeah. great coach, great program.
So what were some of the other schools you were looking at that made the short list?
Down to the final like four or five that I visited and was talking to was Wake Forest, NC State, UNC, Notre Dame, and Portland.
Okay.
Did not like the West Coast very much.
Yeah.
I was not a fan. Notre Dame's a cool school. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but running outside of like Notre Dame's campus is just cornfields.
Yeah. Is it?
And training in the dead of winter for everyone that's in Cleveland here, we know it sucks. It's hard.
Even cornfields, that's even harder.
And the ability to like train through when it's 45 to 55 degrees in the dead of winter in North Carolina, you can get so much more quality out of yourself, whether it's workouts, long runs, mileage, without putting extra strain on your body, fighting against the cold.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good point.
You have a finite amount of suffering every day that you're willing to like endure.
Right.
You don't have to waste it on -5 degree weather or the treadmill.
For
you know,
sure.
Makes a difference.
What were some of the differences going from D3 like to the D3 environment to obviously at the high stage of collegiate athletics? Was it like a culture shock to you? Was it a training shock to you? Because I felt like you already had that like that piece down, but
believe it or not, I was actually the training shock to them. Like Carolina tends to be like a lower like mileage program.
Good for you.
I showed up running 100 to 110.
They're like, look at you, big boy, trying to run all this mileage.
Big D3 guy, huh? Big D3, huh?
They were all, exactly. Yeah, they were all shell-shocked. They're like, is this what you guys do down there? Like,
yeah, that's what I do at least.
it was a bit of a shock culture-wise. A good shock, though. Welcome change.
I would say.
To have everyone at Carolina, it's... they want to be there. They wake up every single morning, like I was talking about, thinking about how do I get better and how do I make the guys around me better? You know, the culture there is, it's something Milt said was you hold people to a high standard on your team out of love, like no other reason, whether it's to make yourself feel good, it's out of love to like build that culture, build that team. And so every day you're around people that are like, you know, they love you. They want you to be better. They're going to help you get better. They're pushing you. And you create this culture of like everyone is uplifting themselves. Everyone's working hard.
Yeah.
It's not weird to like want it and go after it.
For sure.
What was the running like there on the trails and roads and all that? Was it harder than where you're at here?
I hate to say that it's not as nice as Cleveland.
Yes.
I mean, we've got the best trails in the world.
Yes, we do.
I mean, it's phenomenal.
Like, I've gone to some of the best. I've been to, you know, Denver, Flagstaff. All these places that they say are like the running capitals of the world. It's not Cleveland.
Yeah.
I had one place I ran there. It was Tobacco Trail. It's kind of like a hilly towpath essentially.
Okay.
But that's honestly one of the few places that there is to run. You know, there's a couple other small spots, but a lot of it is just back and forth on tobacco. And so
jeez.
I missed the national park, the reservations quite a bit.
Yeah. I know it's crazy too, because we have the national park, but then also the county parks. You know, like Summit County Parks, and then you can get up to Cleveland and all those ones, the Emerald Necklace and everything.
Thousands and thousands of miles of trails here.
Yeah.
You know, take it for granted until you get out and you're like, man.
Was that part of the incentive to move back?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely helps. I love CVNP. Anyone that knows me knows I spend all my free time there. You know, Rocky River Reservation, Brecksville, Bedford, Summit County. Anywhere you can go out in the parks here is just incredible. Yeah. The running's great. The hiking's great. Nice places to hang out. And so I haven't found that anywhere else yet.
Yeah. What were some of the highlights from your perspective from North Carolina? Like, what would you say were some of the greatest, you know, moments?
That's a good question. I'd say number one was winning ACC as a team for cross country. We went into that race at Florida State against, you know, very loaded Notre Dame, Virginia, Syracuse, and a few other miscellaneous, very good nationally ranked lineups. And I remember Milt telling me and Parker before the race, he's like, you know, it's 85 degrees, it's hot, it's hilly, but you guys are stronger than everybody else in the race. So I want you to go to the front 1K in and just make everybody suffer. you know, it's a daunting thing to hear before an 8K in the heat.
Yeah.
but I distinctly remember, you know, 1K in, I looked at Parker. Parker looked at me and it was like, you know, it's time. And so we just got to work, got the business, and we ground everybody down to the point where we had four in the top 10. Parker won it individually. And, you know, winning that team title was the first time since like 1980 or something for UNC.
Whoa,
it was a, really? A long time. It had been, yeah, 30 or 40 years since the last ACC team title. So to bring that home and be a part of that was really special. And, you know, you see your guys holding up the trophy. It's so fun. So cool.
Huh.
I'd say my other favorite memory was in between nationals and trials. We got a house in Bend, Oregon for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so we'd sit outside every night at the fire, you know, make s'mores, make pizza pie molds, hang out as a
good
team.
Good old pudgy pies.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we went antiquing every day we were there. Like, it was like, just like old school, like good fun.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
It was really fun.
It was a good old wholesome time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you think of the trials experience?
That was incredible. You know, it's nerve-wracking for sure. You know, yeah. That entire year at Carolina, I didn't have many moments on the line or before the races where I felt a whole lot of nerves. And I remember sitting there when you're at the trials, you go down to a little room, they have about 30 chairs down there or something. Mm-hmm. And you got some guys that are just sitting there with their heads in their hands, you know, for 20 minutes before the race. You've got some guys doing 100 strides. And you look over and you see like Grant Fisher just sitting there quietly, minding his business, smiling, like, yeah. You know, like the nerves and the way everyone handles them are so different.
Yeah.
And it's such a high tension environment right before racing, but to be around guys that have that caliber and to be a part of that was really cool. The race itself, really hard. I was pretty burnt. I think that was my fifth 10K.
Yeah. Cause it was just so long,
8 weeks. And so I knew we went out in like 4:17 or 4:18, and I was like, this is going to be a really long day. But once in a lifetime experience. I'm so happy I got to do it. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
So walk us through the period from the trials to now.
Yeah. So that
sort of the purgatory of running.
Yeah, that was so. After I finished up at the trials, I had some professional offers where I could have continued on with running, but ultimately decided, you know, if you're going to do something, your heart has to be 100% in it. And at the time, mine was not, you know, to continue on and chase it. And that's really what it takes to be successful at that level. Mm-hmm. Running 110 miles a week just mentally kind of burnt me to the ground, all that racing. So after that, I decided that I was going to step away from running a little bit, still stay in general shape here or there, but not do it at the same level. It's something Milt told me. He's like, if you've been passionate about something, it's a curse and a blessing.
Yeah,
because you're not going to want to do 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You can only do it all the way or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of been closer, I would say, to the not at all. You know, I'm still running 25, 30 miles a week.
Yeah.
God, you got to feel amazing.
That's our realm right there.
It's a good place to be. You know,
you got a smile on your face. You know?
Can enjoy a couple drinks after the run.
Yeah.
I do love it quite a bit. And it's, you know, it's gotten to the point where running for me is more social.
Yeah.
I've got a job that I really like. I'm working for a company called Tremco, doing a little bit of business development, a little bit of supply chain. And so I really enjoy that so far.
Yeah.
I've gotten to travel quite a bit after post grad, which, you know, when you're running so much, it doesn't allow you the freedom to went to Banff. Now I'm going to Switzerland and Italy.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool to have that freedom that I didn't have before. But, you know, I do some days I do miss it competing at that level. Not to say I won't make some sort of comeback in the future to run some local marathons.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, you know, it's all about, you know, now that you've kind of tapped out of that intense high profile game. You know, nobody really cares. You know, it's like you're just, nobody's tracking your Strava. Nobody really cares. But it's just like, it's fun now. And then you can go over to Switzerland and then just do your thing. And it's like when you're in the moment and you're tying up with one person, you know, you're kind of racing a person. Yeah, you'll give it your all there, but you're not going to pour your life into it in the same sort of way. And that feels good to kind of have tapped out in that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's sort of that you are not your results type of thing.
Yeah.
Like you can have a life outside of your running. You can do other things outside of your running.
Yeah.
But still have that ability to like push yourself.
You know? I still like, I run like, you know, 15, 20 miles a week and then I'll you know, still do marathons and I just do them for fun. And I always joke, like, if you run like, you know, a 250 marathon out of shape, it hurts the same as if you run a 218 in shape. And it's like, so I still get the joy of effort out of it, but it's like, but then, you know, you kind of get back there and you're like, man, I kind of wish I was just maybe a little faster so I can compete a little bit. But then sometimes you'll be in a race and somebody's really trying hard and they like get after it and you're like, oh, that's cute. I'm just going to stay right here.
Double-edged sword for sure. That feeling of wanting to do more and also like, you know, it's not so bad.
I know, high-fiving people and kissing babies along the way. It's not bad. But then, but the other thing too is like, I was talking about this with Joe Eby and it was like, you know, we were saying how like, it's really sad that people just tap out all the way because there's some amazing things. I mean, like, you know, the New York Marathon I'm going to run this year. The Boston was amazing. It's like, yeah, you got to run the trials and it's like, but it's still really cool to have 2 million people spectate you and cheer you on in New York. Like, that's pretty amazing. And, you know, even if you got in somewhat decent shape there, you'd still compete reasonably well and have a great experience from it.
There's so much opportunity in running, you know, whether it's like your local 5K going out and competing, just giving your all, or like you said, going to run some of these incredible road races, whether you go, you could go to Hawaii and take a trip and go run a race there, Switzerland, like I'm doing. It's a whole new, like, you know, set of opportunities that are available now to go running.
I know, like, of a lot of the local people that graduate from college and they're like, oh, I'm going to keep running. It's like, good. Now the fun begins. Yeah. Like, it's honestly awesome out there. I mean, you can, like you said, you could travel the world. You can, I mean, I'm going to run a marathon in Cologne in a couple weeks. And like, it's just cool. Like, there's the running culture and the sensibility around the world. It is awesome.
That's one of my favorite things about running too, is like in football, you would never see a professional football player. Very rarely anyways, would you see a professional football player like going to run like a local run club or like going to hang out with a local football group playing on a field. But running, it happens all the time.
All the time.
You know, the runners that are the best in the world are no different than the people coming in at the end of the race. You know, everyone's out there suffering exactly the same.
Yeah.
It hurts exactly the same no matter how fast or slow you run. And so I think that's kind of the beauty of our sport, is everyone's sort of connected from the bottom to the top.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Very poetic.
Yeah.
So what are some kind of, you know, general running goals that you have?
It's a good question. I hate to say it. I need to spend less time with Nikki, Connie, and Eamon, but I'd really like to run a 50 miler and a 100 miler.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard it's a different type of pain to be out there at mile 70, you know, suffering.
Yeah.
Your mind's coming undone.
Do Mohican.
Mohican would be a good
one. That's what I'm doing. I'm just waiting for it. It's at the end of May. Yeah.
Maybe it's time to sign
up. We'll get a cabin. Just like
have get a good time.
Yeah.
You actually do have, I mean, you're fast, obviously, you know, by the way, just to lay it out there, what are your PRs?
Mile is 401.
Oh man.
3K, 753. Yeah, that mile hurts.
He tried.
5K, 1327.
Wait, so 3K was 753?
753.
Nice.
5K was 1327.
Oh, nice.
And 10K was 2751.
Phenomenal. But, you know, obviously that's fast. That's whipping fast. And, but your body type, you do have a little bit of a bigger body type, which does handle trails a little bit better.
That's good news. That's good to
you
hear.
You got that Walmsley, like, dude.
Yeah. No, honestly,
you got that, like, Walmsley.
Seriously, because, you know, the smaller, emaciated, kind of bird framed people don't do well in those long. You need girth. Think of like Arlen. Think of, you know, Walmsley. Yeah. Think of Connie.
Oh, yeah. Walmsley.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you kind of need that, like, that body type a little bit. And you know, for me, like, I've always been kind of lighter framed. And that's why, like, the marathon is about as far as I can really handle at a decent level. But I think for you, you're going to be pleasantly surprised in those longer distances.
You can see I'll dox myself. I fall on the trails all the time. You can see my blood blisters. I don't pick up my feet when I run. And so that's been a little struggle there for you. Yeah. A road runner by heart. But yeah, I'm excited for the trails.
It's going to be fun.
They're calling my name, I think.
Maybe you can dabble with the longer distance stuff that's like more like Badwater or something like that, or Comrades that's on a road or like the canal corridor sort of thing, where you're not like on the trail per se, but you're able to kind of like,
oh, you'll smash that.
That would be fun.
Yeah. You know, cause that's all kind of rhythm running stuff.
You're just hanging out.
And you're not going to, you don't have to worry about tripping over things.
Those CVNP single tracks are, they're dangerous to say the least. You get around ledges.
Yeah.
What I think is like beneficial in your world too is that you've like trained at such a high level for.
Oh, that's such an infrastructure too.
And so like, I know, like, I can sense that you want more balance in life. You know, you want to have a couple drinks after some runs, whatever, like be able to go hang out with friends. But it's like, you don't have to put that many more miles on to go do that. Like, you have the talent. If you run like 40, 50 miles a week,
yeah,
you can go out there and do it.
Opens up some opportunity, especially for some long distance.
I think the point that he's making is like, you with ultras, you can shoot from the hip a little bit more because it really is about just suffering on the day. Like, I remember a couple years ago, probably about 5-6 years ago, I was treating a guy. He was getting ready to run 100. I'm like, oh, are you ready? And he starts laughing. He's like, dude, are you ever ready for 100? And it's like, really? It's 100. Like, you're not ever really genuinely ready for that. And I'm like, that's actually a really good point. I think, like, once you kind of get out of that highly competitive world, you know, we overemphasize preparation. And the ultra scene is really just about that moment in time and that day in suffering. And some days you'll feel really good and you can, you know, corral the moon, and other days you don't, and then you fall apart. But it's like, you know, it's just about going out there and just, you know, challenging yourself in that way.
That goes back to like the pure American distance roots though. You know, anymore on the track, you've got pace lights, pacers, shoe tech.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, it was just, you know, I'm going to go out there and run as hard as I can for 3 miles. Who's going to come with?
Well, I think people have figured this out, and that's why long is the new fast, you know? The sterile track environment has, you know, dissuaded people, and the running fast has dissuaded people. And then now people are very interested in just still suffering, but they like the grassroots side of it. And if you talk to like ultra purists, they're getting really pissed that like sponsors are coming in and it's starting to seep into that world a little bit and formalizing it. But then, you know, the community advances and then goes to backyard ultras and then starts creating new challenges.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you've seen Laz's Backyard Ultra.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Like, those kind of things are just awesome.
Yeah.
Try and get involved in something. You know,
you should do something like that. Dazing, I want to do something like that.
Dazing through the woods for 5 days looking for pages out of a book.
Well, and then one of this guy that went to my high school, he's like one of the best athletes to ever go through our high school, ran at Cincinnati. He's doing a 3,100-mile race.
Around a
block in...
How far is the loop in New York? It's in Harlem. It's like a block. Literally, it's like a block.
Yeah.
It's I don't even think it's a mile.
It's in Queens.
Oh, it's in Queens?
Yeah. It's in Jamaica, Queens. 50 days to complete it. You have to at least run 2 marathons to be on pace to hit the 3,100 miles in 50 days. And you have from 6 a.m. to midnight.
And they've been doing this race for a long time. This is like Japanese style torture stuff. This is like crazy. Yeah, this has been like the monks go to the mountain and just spend days in the mountain barefoot.
It's like a spiritual journey.
What kind of PTO do those guys have?
None, because they don't really work.
The funny thing about Ramsey, which this is a very interesting character, he does most of it barefoot.
That's crazy.
Because he was an 800 guy in high school and college, and then towards the end of his college career, he got like obsessed with barefoot running and everything.
And he moved to Hawaii and just doesn't have a phone.
I'm curious to know.
He actually lives in Lakewood.
He actually lives in Lakewood.
Really?
Yeah.
With like that much running barefoot, like, is his foot getting stronger? Or is he just destroying?
Yeah. No,
well, I don't. He looks really solid. I mean,
yeah. He's wearing shoes now. Like, he wears like ultras and stuff. But yeah, I mean, he said his first like barefoot like run was standing in his front yard in Cincinnati and just like feeling the earth.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's really back to the old school.
Dude, if I can get in touch with him,
yeah,
we should all go run together.
You basically have to sit outside of his house and like...
Yeah, you do. Or like send like bonfire smoke signals up.
Because we've been dying to get him on the podcast.
We just can't.
No other forms of communication.
Dude, I saw him at a coffee shop and I was like, dude, let me get your number.
I might have seen him in the reserve. There's a guy that runs barefoot in the reservation.
But he looks like dread. He's like, mixed, and he's got like darker long hair.
Different guy. Yeah.
But so I was like, dude, can I get your number? Because like, obviously you live up here now. And he's like, yeah. He's like, I probably won't get back to you because I don't turn my phone on until night. So I might get back to you. I might not. And then it was just like,
about it.
I love that.
Yeah, no, he's an honest guy, but he's so genuine.
It's like Blanco from Born to Run? The guy that lives out in the mountains.
Sounds about similar.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to connect.
I mean, it's just about the journey. Like, you know, running when you've tapped out of the high intense world, and it's sort of like, you know, your running is a way for us to continue to just challenge ourselves and just scratch that itch and just be curious and creative about everything. But, you know, in the end, still challenging yourself in these ways is good because you are essentially, you know, working towards different goals and keeping your foot in the door with that. And that helps you be better at everything else.
Oh, absolutely. Once you know, once you've seen, you know, what it takes to be great at something, you can apply it to everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, the way you handle yourself, the way you think, the way you do just about everything.
But that's the thing, though, is that if you train super hard to run, you know, 27:50 on the track, and you run 27:50 on the track, that's gratifying. But if you train moderately hard, but still go to the well in the event that you're training for, that's also just as gratifying.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's the fun punches that you're about to experience.
Yeah. Even in some of these local 5Ks, I've gotten those punches where it was like, you know, that final mile, the legs are burning, the lungs are going, head's telling me to stop, and you keep going and you still get that, like, you know, that felt great. I love being in that place.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you initially start running?
My mom made me run a 5K in second grade. I still remember there's a picture. It's before and after my first 5K. And before, you know, I was smiling, giddy, happy. And after I was on the ground, you know,
like just a mess.
I was like, I'm never doing this again, mom. I used to, my track coach, Philomena Cresa, would put me in the 800 and I hated the speed events. And so in grade school, I would hide behind the high jump mats because I didn't want to run, didn't want to race. And, you know, race would come and go and I'd come out and be like, oh,
you know, like, where's Alex? He's under the bleachers. Oh,
the 800 rod? Yeah.
Just having Skittles and
different work. You know, different world, very crazy how things change like that.
So then, but okay. So then track that kind of same thought pattern. At what point were you like, oh, now I'm ready to hurt?
It clicks.
I started, so freshman year of high school, I started going to cross country practices. And I remember I was running like 6:45 pace every day for about 6 miles freshman year. And everyone was telling me on St. B's team, they're like, you know, you're going to burn out. This is what burnout is. Slow down. You can't do this every day with workouts. And just kind of like, you know, I'm just going to keep doing it. See what happens.
Like, no.
Bullheadedness, stubborn.
Well, you played soccer too, right?
Yeah. Soccer. I never practiced soccer in high school. I just went to and played games, which was a great situation for myself.
How many years did you play?
Soccer, I played up until, I did freshman, sophomore, senior year.
Oh, geez.
Didn't play junior year. I tried to lock in on running to get better and I got worse. And so I dove back into soccer because I was like, clearly this is some sort of like external stimulant that's helping me. So jumped back in and time started dropping again. Interesting.
That's amazing.
Enough. And so
where'd they have you on the field playing soccer?
Center back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I was a little more talented, score goals.
Your defense guy.
That's the glory goes to the guy that scores the goal, but you got to have the defense wins championships, defense wins games. So it was cool. It's like one of the, you know, they say, kids that specialize too young burn out, you know, for every one Mbappe, Federer, all those guys that you see that specialize since they were like little kids, there's thousands and thousands that never made it.
It's just falls apart.
So it's kind of nice to come to running at a little bit of a later age, like get into loving it on my own terms versus being guided into it as a kid.
Yeah.
Except for your mom making you run that 5K.
That was a, besides the 5K in second grade.
Do you do any rec soccer at all?
I actually have two games at Pinnacle later tonight.
Yes. I knew it, dude. I saw those. You get soccer in your eyes still.
You can't get away from it. Rec soccer is so fun. Same thing. Like, you know, you get out with like a couple of your 8-10 good buddies, play against whoever, and then everyone on both sides goes to Brew Wall.
What position?
Center back still. still not scoring tall, goals. Man. Even in rec league, still not scoring.
You're playing center back.
Unfortunately.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, all right. Well, so I think we're kind of rounding third a little bit on the episode here. And this has been fun. And we'll have to have you back on another time because this is cool. I feel like we can really dig through a lot of fun stuff. We'll have to kind of talk a little bit about your ultra world as well.
John, after
hopefully good results. Yeah, next time I talk to you guys.
We're not building it up at all. But you know, like, any final points or tidbits to anybody that might be listening to this episode, and just kind of some Alexisms?
Yeah, I guess a word of advice for anyone at any level running is just be consistent. You know, it's not about not necessarily about how fast you run, how far you run. It's more about just doing it every single day, you know, whether you want to or not. If you want to get better, just get out of bed, be consistent, make it a habit, and it sort of becomes who you are after that. Everyone that runs knows that. Once you start, you kind of can't stop. And keep it light, I guess, you know, especially in the world of post-grad running.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Get out with friends. Make it a social thing. It's heck of a lot better to be running with people, you know, enjoying what you're doing versus running by yourself.
Yeah, and it's not taking that all or nothing approach kind of thing. Just be okay with not training at the craziest level and just kind of have fun with it. And
it's okay to have fun. Yeah, yeah. Smile, enjoy the ride, and enter as many races as you can. They're a blast. All these local races are so fun.
Beer tents afterwards. Yeah.
That's so awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, Alex, for coming on the episode. This was a blast, and it's a pleasure getting to hear your story and kind of some tidbits of advice from you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
All right. All the best.
See you.
Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback, but again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries.